Welcome to ID the Future. This is Casey Luskin broadcasting with Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture in Seattle, Washington. We have on the show with us today Dr. Jonathan Wells, a senior fellow at Discovery Institute and a holder of two PhDs, one in biology from UC Berkeley and another in theology from Yale University. Dr. Wells has written multiple books, which many of our listeners have probably heard of or read, including Icons of Evolution, The Design of Life, The Myth of Junk DNA, and The Politically Incorrect Guide to Darwinism and Intelligent Design. Dr. Wells, thanks for coming on the show with us.
It's a pleasure to be here, Casey.
Well, you wrote a very enjoyable post on the website Evolution News and Views recently, titled Biology's Quiet Revolution, where you discuss this concept of DNA makes RNA makes protein, that central dogma of biology, and you explain how some evidence has been challenging that central dogma, and by extension, challenging the Darwinian paradigm. So, first of all, could you maybe explain for our listeners, what do you mean by the claim DNA makes RNA makes protein makes us? And then maybe could you begin to explain what is wrong with that claim?
Well, the claim is an abbreviated popular statement of the idea that every organism contains a program for itself in its DNA. That is, the DNA contains the instructions for specifying the organism through the pathway of encoding RNAs, which in turn encode proteins, which in turn make the organism. And the reason this is important for Darwinism is because the modern version of Darwin's theory assumes that new variations for evolution arise through DNA mutations. And this makes perfect sense. If you mutate the program that prescribes the organism, then you change the organism, and natural selection can then go on and preserve the favorable changes. The problem with the formulation that DNA makes RNA makes protein makes us is that the evidence now shows that it fails at every single step. First of all, we know that the sequence in DNA, that is the code, is not reliably translated or transcribed, rather, into RNA. In between the DNA and the RNA, two processes ensure that this will not happen. One is called RNA splicing. In organisms such as ourselves, the protein coding regions in our DNA are separated by non-protein coding regions. All of these regions are transcribed into RNA sequences, but then the RNA is cut up, the non-coding regions are cut out, and the coding regions are put back together again. Only they can be put back together in different ways. So we know one stretch of DNA, for example, in fruit flies, that can yield over 18,000 different proteins through this process of alternative splicing.
So, Dr. Wells, you mentioned there are two processes. What's the second one?
The second one, in addition to RNA splicing, is RNA editing. The organism actually changes the subunits in many of its RNAs, altering them in such a way that the final sequence, that is the code in the RNA, does not match the code in the DNA. So these two processes, RNA splicing and RNA editing, ensure that the code in the RNAs is not the same, in many cases, as the code in the DNA.
So some other processes are intervening between the DNA makes RNA part of this process to create a disconnect right there at that point of the statement.
That's correct. So the DNA doesn't even contain a program to completely specify the RNA, much less the organism.
Now, Dr. Wells, you also talk about prions in your post. How do they factor into this situation?
Well, prions go to the next step, that is the RNA makes protein step. Prions are proteins that normally fold one way but can fold a different way and cause disease. And there are actually many proteins now, we know, just in the last few years, called metamorphic proteins that have the same amino acid sequence, that is, they've got the same code from the RNA, but they fold differently. And it's the folding that determines the function. So in effect, RNA makes protein doesn't work either because the RNA is not specifying the final functional form of the protein. And those are just a couple of cases. Another example, this was actually the focus of my blog post, consists of what are called intrinsically disordered proteins. These are proteins that never adopt a folded form until they interact with some other molecules in the cell. And then their folded form depends in part on the molecules that they're interacting with. It turns out these proteins are quite common and also functionally very important.
That's really fascinating, Dr. Wells. So could you explain for our listeners maybe a little bit more about these intrinsically disordered proteins, or IDPs as you call them? This may be something new to some of our listeners. If they don't have a particular shape, how can they perform a function in the cell? And are these basically multifunctional proteins if they can acquire different shapes depending on what molecules they interact with?
Well, that's correct. They are multi-shape proteins, if you will, because their final folded shape depends on their interactions. And they're turning out to play important roles in signaling processes within the cell. They're common in nerves and brain tissue. And their final form, obviously, is not prescribed by the RNA. So the DNA makes RNA makes protein formula breaks down in these cases. And we're talking about possibly a third of the proteins in our body.
That's really striking. And you talk about a new paper that was published recently that discusses assemblages, which are composed of many of these intrinsically disordered proteins, and that these might be biologically important. In fact, they may be a lot more important than we once realized. How does that play into this whole question of whether DNA makes RNA makes protein?
Well, the paper that I discussed in my blog proposes that biologists spend more time and energy studying these assemblages, which are transient things inside the cell. They're not bound by membranes. They're just sort of clouds. And many of them consist of intrinsically disordered proteins and appear to have important functions. So they've been relatively neglected because so many biologists still think in terms of the DNA makes RNA makes protein formula. So this new paper encourages more study of these assemblages.
Dr. Wells, if we could bring this back home to sort of the implications for Darwinism. If it's not true that DNA makes RNA, makes protein, and then makes us, what does that mean for the validity of the Darwinian paradigm?
Well, it means that the Darwinian paradigm, insofar as it rests on the assumption that DNA mutations provide raw materials for evolution, is false. The truth is, Darwinism doesn't have an explanation for the origin of novelties in evolution, and this is one reason why, because of the problem with the DNA program idea. And if it doesn't have an explanation for evolutionary novelties, then all it's really about is survival of the fittest, but not, as some people have said, the arrival of the fittest.
This is very fascinating, and I think you're giving us a real read on the direction that biology is going now, and I'm sure these will be developments and trends we'll be following for a long time. So thank you so much for sharing with us today on ID the Future.
My pleasure.
I'm Casey Luskin with ID the Future. Don't let anybody tell you that DNA makes RNA, makes protein, makes you, unless they include a lot of qualifications. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2014. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.